Well, you already heard the title. This is the opportunity to give credit to Mary Rose Murren, who is not here, and who is one of, she has just retired. She is one of those people who has been indispensable in the analysis of the kinds of data that I'm talking about here. So we're all going to be scrambling hereafter to figure out how to continue this work with Medicaid data. Now I'm going to go like this. Okay, I have nothing to disclose, or at least nothing that APHA would care about. I think it sounds so limiting. We should all have a little mystery, but so be it. Other acknowledgments are the first two, Sue and Charles, who worked on this project. Charles runs the data center within which the data came. Roger Boothroyd, whom you have just met, if you hadn't seen him before, was the person who managed the parent contract under which this work happened, and so he had the pleasure of interacting with the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration, which also gets credit for believing that once again the ratio of utility to embarrassment would be greater than one in the work that we might produce. Always a big question for a state agency looking for input. So the context of this work is Medicaid. I forgot to mention David Schirn, who originated this process, whereby the Florida Mental Health Institute, now part of the College of Behavior and Community Sciences, worked with Medicaid, with the Medicaid agency, to evaluate the movement into managed care. Now that movement has been complete. We'll see where those arrangements go, but David was, without David having started that, we wouldn't be talking about these data. So that waiver is the context for the work. We've had this contract for some years. The current study is focusing on 4 years of administrative data and looking at 10 of the specific groups of interest because of their potential vulnerability and the importance of their obtaining the right kinds of services. There were many, many different managed care plans, and so the question was, how is each of them doing? How is the program doing overall? And what kinds of services are people getting, and what kinds of the two outcomes that were accessible to us in this program were arrests and emergency involuntary psychiatric evaluations. From our point of view, as a long-time evaluator organization for the Medicaid managed care, this is the last opportunity before moving into a wholesale program of Medicaid managed assistance to set at least historical baseline information as a reference for when you change the system, how are you doing relative at least to historical levels, whether or not they were wonderful. So the 10 population groups that were of interest included anyone starting as early as the age of 6 and going up through 64 who had been discharged from an inpatient stay. Adults who were beginning an antidepressant treatment regimen, children from 6 to 17 who were beginning an ADHD medication, and same age group using any psychotic medication. So those were the kind of precipitating service experiences that defined 4 of the groups. 6 of the groups were defined by new diagnoses. So if newly diagnosed with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or major depressive disorder, newly diagnosed with mood disorders, conduct disorder, or ADHD. There was overlap in the populations between any of the service events, within any of the service events, and of course the diagnostic groups. But the diagnostic groups were independent. So if you were in one group, you were not going to be included in another group. This is the set of characteristics of the people who were enrolled in these programs. Partial demographic data available. Almost 1.5 million people enrolled in all of these plans total. 20% of them used mental health services during that period. a little bit more, a greater number of females, almost equal proportion of whites, African Americans, and Hispanics, the three largest groups in classification groups in Florida, at least classified the way the federal government used to. The Medicaid agency has not shifted to the federal system of race and ethnicity being separate. And then, interestingly, because of the emphasis on the child diagnoses, the age 6 to 17 was was the largest group here, but a substantial number of adults, and then a smaller number of younger children. There were three types of plans here. The traditional HMO, there were 14 of those, a different kind of arrangement, capitated provider service networks, another model that didn't have a separate health plan but was built in to a provider network itself. And that was a newer phenomenon, and the prepaid mental health plans that have been around for quite some time, six of those. The enrollment in the prepaid mental health plans, which I'll just call PMHPs, as we call them here, was median number was roughly twice the HMO enrollment. Very smaller number, but a larger number per plan. That range of mental health use, the 71 is an outlier, but still the mental health use in the prepaid mental health plan was higher than HMOs. And the provider service networks are small in part because they have just gotten started, but it was a financing mechanism and plan equivalent that ACA was interested in. Overall, though, 90% of the enrollees were in plans that were had enrollments greater than 25,000. So the very small plans were some of them were excluded from analyses for reasons of having not enough population in the cells. And overall, 95% of the total enrollment was included here. Data were what you'd expect from this kind of analysis: enrollment figures, eligibility status, demographics, all of these, encounter records, pharmacy data, information about the plans, so we knew how to characterize them. A separate set of data on the involuntary psychiatric evaluations, known in Florida as a law called Baker Act. But of course, Baker Act has become a verb, so that's what you do to someone. It's a hardly enlightened way of thinking about it. And then arrest records from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So the analysis was not specifically based on people. It was taking 90-day periods following the event that defined the population. So if you got a diagnosis, then there was a look for 90 days after that to see what kinds of services were received or outcomes of these two types were experienced. So it was theoretically possible for a person to have more than one, an individual person to have more than one episode, although few had more than two, and not very many even had the two. They had to be enrolled continuously in a plan during the follow-up period in order to be eligible for inclusion in the analysis. And then in the analyses that were comparing different plans, the enrollment duration was used as a weighting factor to compare plans. So the penetration rate then was the proportion of included enrollees who were served, or rather a proportion of included enrollees, who received any service in a particular service category, which I'll get to next. Shortly. So in order to compare plans, the method was logistic regression, controlling for many of the kinds of important variables you might want to have. Because of variation in cell size, the correction method for that was Firth's penalized likelihood method, and it tends to give a higher level of significance on a given analysis than traditional ones. So the alpha level was set to 0.001, which is quite conservative in this case. And then at the end, I'll talk about a plan level set of correlations between the penetration rates and the outcomes. So we're looking, evaluating plan as the unit of analysis in those. So what were the categories? There was one that covered every other type of service. So any outpatient service. Did someone get anything of what's all listed below? Assessment, treatment planning, the normal full range of basic outpatient services, within which there was medication management, but that was broken out as a separate figure to be reported. And then case management, called targeted case management, because to get that kind of service, you had to be in a special high-need group. It's not a service that's available except to defined populations. And then intensive outpatient services, which bundle quite a few services, including group treatments for people with higher need. So here's an example of the 90-day service penetration rates for a few of the services. A few of the populations. Fairly good, quite good, response to diagnosis of a child mood disorder. So the three different sets there, blue, red, and green, roughly. The PMHP a little bit higher, but not significantly so than HMO. HMO a little higher than the PSNs, and all in the almost 90 to 100 range. In that group, a similar pattern, step-down pattern from PMHP to PSN for medication management. So at the, between 40 and 50% of those people getting any outpatient services were getting medication management in that disorder group. People newly receiving ADHD medication, clearly higher proportion receiving medication, somewhat lower penetration rates, meaning of the people who would have qualified for receiving those services, a little over 80% on average got those services, but still better than some of the other categories, because these were children and susceptible for relatively straightforward treatment in outpatient settings. The inpatient follow-up data are less pleasing. NCQA wouldn't think this was a good idea, that if you got discharged from an inpatient unit, an average of 60% plus or minus had any kind of outpatient follow-up at all in the 90-day period. So there's some challenges in people receiving the needed services through these mental health plans, including the PMHPs, but especially challenges in the HMO and PSN categories. Here's an example, final example, using people newly diagnosed with schizophrenia. Now, the way this process worked is if you fell into the schizophrenia group in 1 year, but you didn't have any services for a period of time, the very next year you could also, as an individual, you could also create a new episode to be looked at. It could be that in the interim you had some services, but those were not seen because to get in this group you had to have a new diagnosis, meaning you hadn't had a visit for a while with that diagnosis. However, the population is being served fairly well in terms of getting any kind of outpatient services. What you see, though, is that for this population in particular, there is definitely that step-down process where the specialty plan provides more of every kind, almost every kind of service, except for treatment planning, than the other types of programs. One also would raise a question if you have a diagnosis of schizophrenia whether you oughtn't to be getting something more intensive than basic outpatient and medication management. So it raises some question about the service package that is available for people, or at least given to them. There were general findings that cut across all of these 10 different types of analyses. In general, the PMHP, the specialty plans, had higher penetration rates for most of the populations looked at, and next was HMOs, and next the provider service networks. We've seen elsewhere more outpatient services for women. For adult males, more intensive treatments, intensive outpatient and targeted case management. Similarly, for younger males, boys, who also then had more medication management. We could expect that some of that follows from the ADHD populations. African Americans, again, as seen before, had more intensive outpatient and targeted case management, and less of, significantly less of the other types of outpatient treatment, especially basic outpatient and medication management. So they were being selectively referred to the more intensive services. General findings on outcomes were that people who had been served in the PMHPs had lower emergency psych evaluations and arrests than people served in HMOs, so more effective in that sense. Down from the HMOs for the provider service networks. Hispanics had fewer of either adverse outcome, and younger adults tended to have higher rates. So then we look and conclude really with the service penetration and outcome correlation. So we looked at the penetration rates and at the outcome, at the outcomes. Correlation at the plan level, but weighted by the size of the plan. I'll just give you the results in two classifications. Assessment and treatment in one group, and any all of the rest in another for each of the outcomes. So here we see the assessment and treatment planning relationship to the involuntary psychiatric evaluations. Using outcome that as an outcome is a little bit complicated because it's a service also, and it can precipitate, for example, inpatient hospitalizations. So we kind of expect a positive correlation between that for most populations. But not for adult schizophrenia, which by and large should be getting more treatment and assessment, treatment planning and assessment all along. So these are not particularly of concern. However, what we do see for all of the other outpatient services is that there is a significant negative relationship between provision of any of the other outpatient services and needing to get an inpatient psychiatric evaluation, which is to say, if you don't provide those services, you're going to see more emergency evaluations, specific for that population, less so for the other types of populations which are less at risk of that and less needing the ongoing provision of outpatient services. We move to arrests, which is separate from service, so it's a much more independent kind of outcome. And we see a relationship only between arrests and these service functions for people with adult bipolar disorder. So the concept is that there is a relationship between getting arrested and needing to have these psychiatric evals, so in effect a referral for those kinds of services. Not terribly surprising. However, for all of the populations, almost all of the services produce the same thing we saw with a schizophrenia group in the emergency evaluation. So your chance of being arrested was much higher, significantly so anyway, than if you got if you didn't get these outpatient services. So we have a direct confirmation of the notion that keeping people in service, giving them the appropriate treatment as they go along, will reduce their connection to the legal system. So, summary to conclude, I think I'm just about there. So, we've seen patterns echoing what we've seen before in other kinds of looks at service. The plans that we've had here vary significantly in how they deliver the basic outpatient services. Many people are getting the services, but quite a few are not getting services that would seem appropriate. Services are, for example, the inpatient discharge. Four of the populations that are especially high need are way more likely to get the services they need in a specialty plan. So if we're looking at the implications of what kinds of managed care programs we set up, we expect better results from programs that really know how to treat the population, that makes sense, or that are structured with their providers to provide that. So healthcare per se is just not sufficient. It's got to be shaped around the needs of the population being served. And as demonstrated by the fact that the absence of the low and intermediate intensity outpatient services, the kinds that would sustain and maintain people in the community, absence of those leads to higher rates of this one outcome, which is involvement with the legal system. Clearly, an observational study. There was some selection involved in terms of which plans people got into. So you could argue that, well, there was a greater motivation to engage if you were in a prepaid mental health plan. But nonetheless, looking across all the plans, we see that effect. And this method of analyzing the vast volume of data over 4 years certainly removed some of the data, but this is a big picture look. And, of course, finally, just correlating doesn't tell us anything about causation, and I'm taking liberties with that. So now what do we do?
We have time for probably one or two questions for Greg.
Intensive outpatient is a framework for within which a provider organization can bill for providing the services, and it includes a wide range of services. Probably not case management at the degree of targeted case management, but some of that group treatments specific includes psychotherapy, CBT for certain types of problems, and so forth. So it's a package, and it's between the provider and the consumer exactly what is provided. But it allows for a more intensive regimen than just outpatient visits.
An outpatient visit could be a one-to-one?
Yes, an outpatient visit could be a one-to-one, yes.
Another question, Kurt?
In relation to the data on arrest, I was wondering if Florida has any of the mental health police trainings available. Here in Chicago, we do crisis intervention training for the police. I was just curious.
There is a fair amount of that in Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, and our shop has helped to foster that, but not up to us. We're just part of it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I don't have the data on who in this group could be a veteran. There are many veterans who don't absolutely go through the VA system, but this is Medicaid. This is not through the VA system. So it's not specifically intended to include veterans.